welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Charles.
Hello.
And Swara.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about year-end wrapped style lists. What's kind of fun about it? Is it just gamified data scraping? Why did Discord get in it? And that one I don't have an answer on. I just saw that Discord apparently did it, and that seems weird. I don't know that I care about my use of a chat app. My phone shames me enough with screen time reports every week, so I think we're good. But anyway, before we get into all of that, starting this episode the way we start every episode, what have y'all been enjoying this week?
I got into the new Aknights Endfield beta test 2. It's right. An upcoming open zone third-person action-adventure game, same spirit as like Genshin Impact and those sorts of games. Put a lot of time on it. By the time this recording goes live, I think my thoughts will probably be on the site. If they're not, they will be soon. And it's a lot. It's really cool. I like a lot of stuff it does. Some hiccups, for sure, especially since it's been a very interesting experience where I like an element in the game conceptually. I like what it does for like the theme of the game, but I don't want to engage with it. So it's kind of odd, but yeah. that's been my big thing. So how about you, Swara?
What about you, Swara?
So this is something I enjoyed a few weeks ago when I was in New York to watch a watch it on stage. This is still off Broadway in New York. This amazing play called Meet the Kartosians by Armenian American playwright Talin Monahan. By the way, you can check out all my coverage about it on Nerds of Color, and I gave the play an A+. It's amazing. Basically, the premise for this play. So in 1924 and 1925, you had this court case called Kartosian v. U.S. It was a state level court. And basically the Kartosian family, some of whom were already living in the U.S., but still many of them had to come from Armenia, or really former Western Armenia, after the Armenian genocide by the Ottoman Empire, modern day Turkey. Mm-hmm. So the family had to argue in court that they could be considered quote unquote white, because thanks to a lot of the thoughts of our founding fathers, mm-hmm. the conception of citizenship was really like you had to be a white man to be 100% white. 100% a citizen. The thing is, because Armenia is in West Asia, although, you know, some argue, including in this play, like, oh, is it really the tail end of Europe? But it's West Asia. Is it considered, quote unquote, Asian? So the family, who have a mix of phenotypes as well, has to argue in court. And that's Act 1, where you see the play. But then in Act 2, you see modern-day Armenians discuss the ramifications of that case and what Armenian issues are today, especially in the light of what's going on in Armenia, and specifically with the, I mean, it's very tragic, like the very recent, in like 2023, ethnic cleansing of the Armenian region Artsakh in the borders of Azerbaijan, the Azerbaijanis like ethnically cleansed them, and it was absolutely horrific. It was basically like flaring warning signs of another Armenian genocide taking place, and Armenia remains unfortunately under like that threat. So the Armenian experience, filled with tragedy but also with so much hope, with so much determination, with so much resilience, especially as you see in the Armenian American community today and as portrayed in this play. Again, Talin Monahan is a genius playwright. Also, this play stars Armenian American icon Andrea Martin. You'll know her as Aunt Vula from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. She's amazing in this and hilarious as always. And again, she's the most famous Armenian American, but she's never played an Armenian role before. This is her first time in this play, and she feels so cathartic. I actually got to speak with her a bit after the play performance. It was so cool. Currently it's only on second stage NYC until December 14th. Highly recommend everyone go see it if you're in New York. But the thing is, it was extended by a week from December 7th to December 14th. So fingers crossed, hopefully that means it gets a Broadway run. So yeah, really hopeful for that. And I have one other far less serious, but still I would say very meaningful thing to recommend. And I was listening to Alex, your and Kate's episode about brain rot. So
okay.
Part of the reason
do you have some brain rot to recommend?
Well, no, well, here's the thing. You know, I've talked about Dropout on the show before and how amazing it is. Dropout does it dabbles in brain rot very artfully, you know, like with such amazing improvisation, with so
is
much brilliance.
Is this about a thing that just came out?
Well, I mean, season three of Very Important People with Vic Michaelis just came out. And if you don't know, so Vic Michaelis, they are brilliant comedian, improviser. I'll just honestly say wonderfully insane. I feel like that's their brand. Mm-hmm. And they do this show where they take one of the Dropout cast members or another comedian or improviser coming in and guesting. They have no idea what they're going to be dressed as or have their makeup in. And they do that with the makeup team. And then they have to make up a character on the spot that Vic then interviews. And it is hilarious. It is so wonderfully mind-numbing. It is just, Vic is a genius, and everyone at Dropout is a genius. Everyone get a Dropout subscription.
And to be clear, the season three premiere is Rekha Shankar
as
a giant sentient hot dog.
And she is the mother of all hot dogs.
Yes.
It is amazing.
Also Catholic at the start of the episode. It's a really abstract, weird episode. I mean, I saw, they all are, if we're being real. I did see there was a little bit of division because the running theme in that episode is just straight up suicide jokes. So I did see some people online who were like, this episode kind of bummed me out. For me personally, I was like, it's a giant talking hot dog saying
exactly.
they want to die.
Exactly.
I thought that was very funny. It's a great show. It's a very weird show. I watched that last night.
So good.
I guess also on that for mine, the latest episode of Gastronauts, which Gastronauts is a cooking challenge show, and it's just comedians
also
come up
on
with
Dropout.
Challenges. Yes, the chefs compete. And this latest episode had one challenge that I really liked, which was it was Ali Beardsley, and they said, you know, I eat sushi all the time. I've had everything that my local sushi place has to offer. So I want you to make me the most unique sushi you can, but I get to help. I'm going to come in the kitchen and you have to let me help with whatever you're doing. And so just adding that level or like that layer to it of having to guide someone who is not a professional chef into making a professional chef quality meal. That was good. My other thing is I just found out about this from a newsletter from comic writer Ram V. It's a 1976 jazz piano album called Scenery by Ryo Fukui. And it's like six tracks, but it's 40 minutes long. One of them, I think, is a solid 10 minutes of this dude just wailing on a piano, and it's incredible. It's such a good album. I highly recommend people check it out. Sadly, I think he passed away in the 2010s, maybe a little bit before that. But yeah, just made really incredible music, self-taught piano player, and just really, really good. So that's my thing. But yeah, thank you guys for the recommendations. Before we get into the episode, actually, you know what? I don't want to jump to this yet. I do want to talk about briefly, Swari, you had mentioned this whole attempted acquisition of HBO. Do you guys have any thoughts on that before we segue?
I mean, obviously not thrilled about it.
Which I should say for listeners at home, if you somehow have not heard, Netflix is trying to buy Warner Brothers and HBO. Yeah. And I say everyone is talking about it as if it's a done deal. Technically, there's an antitrust process where it gets evaluated and they decide if it can be allowed. I'm not confident that's going to shut it down. So
the only significant chance, if you could even call it that, that it could stop is Paramount wanted to buy it. The people who own Paramount are very close to Trump. So we have an administration that does not need an excuse to be favoritism. So who knows?
And especially when they can easily disguise it as, well, one of the three biggest streamers buying another streamer is an unfair, you know.
Exactly.
They can wrap it up however they want to shut it down.
Yeah.
Now, if they wrap it up like that and then turn around and hand it to Paramount,
that's also bad. Yeah, that's not any better. But
yeah.
I'll just say, you know, with all that considered, I actually have a lot of confidence it's going to go through. I don't want to put 100% on that, but basically these mergers have been happening in the last few decades and nothing has been done to stop them, whichever administration is under. And, you know, like first and foremost, I'm very concerned, you know, obviously for all the writers and other Hollywood workers and the layoffs that are inevitably going to come as a result of this. I pray that they're overall minimal somehow. And, but I do want to say, like, you know, with that Paramount aspect, I breathed a huge sigh of relief. I have been worried about Paramount buying Warner Brothers for months. And believe you me, that would have been absolutely worst case scenario. And I'm very grateful that at least at the moment, that any momentum they had has been blunted. I think that both Netflix and Warner Brothers feel very confident their deal is going to go through. And again, I don't like any of these mergers, but I do genuinely see this as like a least bad case scenario. As for the worries about, you know, Warner Brothers and theaters with Netflix's track record, I understand people's concerns, but I think there may be some catastrophizing that's happening as well. Netflix has, I mean, at least for now, of course, and of course they could change, but still, like, they're making an effort to say, you know, Warner Brothers films are still in theaters. Also, Warner Brothers films make money. They've they've done so well this year in theaters.
It does feel like when I saw people talk about that, it did kind of feel like a similar situation to like when Microsoft announced they were buying Activision and everyone was like, Call of Duty is not going to be on PlayStation. It's like, no, people, Call of Duty will be on PlayStation.
Yeah. So what Netflix has said specifically about it is that, and this is where they said the thing that sounded good, but when you read it a little bit deeper, it's not as great, is they basically they said they want theatrical run windows to become, quote, more consumer friendly. Now, the way that that usually happens is that something is in theaters and then it is available remotely, you know, like at home fairly easily. However, Netflix probably is thinking that it will be more friendly for consumers, meaning Netflix customers.
Right.
And like, and this is not an original thought. Friend of the show, I think Paul posted about that. But yeah, it's like, so it's more friendly for consumers, but do we really think that means they're going to throw it up on, you know, Fandango at home for you to rent? Or do we mean it's going to go on Netflix and you have to pay us
or
to watch
HBO.
It still?
I really do think that HBO itself is such a huge name, just as huge, as well as it being owned by Warner Brothers, just as huge as Warner Brothers. It's an institution onto itself. They know that. They're not going to, especially with the funds they can continue to reap off of, like, having these, you know, having the basic, you know, Netflix streaming service, but then the premium of HBO. I know that Disney is doing their merger with Hulu. I don't know, maybe that could happen, but personally, I don't see, like, a that scenario, especially because Netflix is literally the biggest streamer in the world already. You know, internationally.
So I think where my hesitation, I mean, obviously a big part of this is companies should not be this big. Yeah. Companies should not have this much sway. My other hesitation with it is that I think Netflix has proven, now not everything Netflix makes is bad. I want to preface it with that.
They make a lot of really good really stuff enjoy, as well as bad. Yeah.
But they meddle a lot is my impression.
Sure.
And that's where I'm like, I don't trust them to let, you know, for the easy example, I don't trust them to let James Gunn do his thing.
Oh, no, I think they are going to, though. I think they've seen the success that the DCU has had already, the goodwill that the fandom has. Again, this could just be me, like, this is just, like, my gut instinct,
I hope
you know?
I hope that they know to let him do his thing. I just really worry that they're going to meddle and try to, like, do something with it, or we need more, we need a series, we need things on our platform, you know? Like, are they going to go the Disney route where now I know that DC has, like, Peacemaker, but is it going to be, oh, now I have to watch 20 hours of television to understand this movie because Netflix wanted to crank out a bunch of superhero shows?
What I'm hopeful is that what they do is the exact opposite of what Disney and Marvel have done of trying to connect anything and everything. Mm-hmm. Where DC has always thrived has been in its multiverse. There's so many different live action and animated series of DC characters. It would make sense to just have those on Netflix, have them produced for Netflix. Mm-hmm. And as well as other properties. Netflix animation has really been booming in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Potentially. I mean, I don't want Warner Brothers animation to be combined with Netflix. I'm not saying that at all. I certainly don't want Cartoon Network Studios to be subsumed at all. I hope that Cartoon Network Studios continues to be able to make things for HBO Max as well as other streaming services like they are with Lars of the Stars for Prime. I think Netflix understands the value of animation. They understand, honestly, I feel like they understand the value of kids' content. I mean, they have bought, I mean, in their like now streaming of Sesame Street, they understand, hey, this is a huge market to keep families on. And, you know, as we've seen with HBO, unfortunately, in the last few years and their cutting of animating kids content. Again, I say all of this like from an optimistic angle. I could totally be wrong on everything, but I, again, just have such a huge sense of relief that, I mean, honestly, I was expecting slash hoping it would be Universal, but here's the other thing. Netflix, unlike any of these other companies, does not own any legacy media. You see, this is the first time they're actually, you know, getting that. And I hope that, like, again, like this would be Netflix foraying into a theatrical model, you know, via WB, and maybe seeing more of the incentives of that, financial incentives of that. But I, once again, I'm just so, so relieved and, you know, knock on wood that it's not David Ellison.
A lot of the, I woke up to the news of the acquisition, and then most of what I saw on social media was along the lines of, I hate that this is the least evil thing that could have happened. Like, that this was the best case scenario. Yeah, the,
like, it shouldn't be sold at all. You know, like, I want to make it abundantly clear. Just in the circumstances where
I mean, Zaslav has been working toward this for a while now, unfortunately.
Initially, it was reported, like, a few years ago when he was doing all this stuff with Warner Brothers Discovery that he was going to make a sell to Universal, where he used to work. So that's where I was expecting it to go.
Interesting.
The the other thing about the whole situation that I think has gone underreported, and I hope that it all turns out as okay as it can, is also WB Games.
Oh yeah,
NetherRealm, and oh my God, I'm spacing on, but the Arkham Knight, the Arkham game,
the Arkham series,
Rocksteady. There you go.
Mortal Kombat.
That, like, all those things. Like, what's gonna happen to them? Like, it almost feels like, because Netflix has been one of those companies that they've dabbled in games, but you know, like, and you know, like, they've
paid people to put games on their platform before too, I think. Or they paid for partnerships. Like, you can play Oxenfree on your phone.
Well, they own the Oxenfree studio now. They bought the Oxenfree studio, but like Hades is on there. They just got Red Dead Redemption 1 on there. They do That's want nuts. That stuff, but at the same, like, and you know, and there is that hope that, like, well, you know, WB's been screwing up the game side pretty hard, like they have with a lot of stuff. So there's that hope that, well, maybe,
I mean, Arkham Knights happened. We can't forget that.
Well, not that, but also, I mean, like, they made Rocksteady make Suicide Squad. So,
oh yeah, that's, like, I mean, that was the second big misstep, which was also frustrating because the original Batman Arkham games are so good.
So that's a side where, like, it almost feels like maybe the best case scenario is maybe they'll just end up selling them to someone who will make good games.
I don't think they're gonna sell them. I think they realize, again, the value of this IP, and I think you know, they, yeah, we'll see what happens with, like, Warner Brothers games. Potentially, you know, because Netflix games has been so subpar, like, they'll just subsume that into Warner Brothers games.
Yeah, if the absorption goes the other way, that could be helpful.
Yeah, it just depends. Like I said, I hope everyone gets through it. You know, there's a lot of legacy. Mortal Kombat is, like, probably my least favorite of the major fighting game brands, but still, it has a place and a legacy that I would hate to see get tossed aside. So,
we'll
see. I think My big thing is, I mean, obviously this shouldn't have happened for a lot of reasons. There's a very specific capitalist thing happening here. And the analogy I'm going to put to it is the princess episode of Powerpuff Girls.
Oh, yes.
Where she wants to be a Powerpuff Girl and she buys her way into having powers like them. And when I saw it, was a list of, like, here's all the things that WB owns now.
But here's the thing. Princess is literally David Ellison. They're literally the same person.
I mean, yes, there's other people, but it was a list of all the things that Netflix will own if this goes through. And one of them was, like, Citizen Kane. And I'm like, Netflix has zero business owning Citizen Kane. They did not, like, they're a corporation, not an artist. So for them to suddenly have all of these art properties, I mean, and I know that capitalism has always been a part of the film industry. I know this goes back, but there's just something to me that feels so gross about Netflix popping up as a distribution platform, shifting into a little bit of original content creation, but mostly still being a distribution platform and then buying things that are as historic and important as that.
Yeah.
That to me specifically feels, it's, I mean, it's, you know, it's Chamber of Secrets when Malfoy gets on the team and buys everyone new brooms. That's what it feels like. This is someone throwing around money to get access to things that they have no business having access to, is kind of how I feel about it. And again, a thing that will ultimately prove quite possibly pretty anti-consumer, because Netflix doesn't have a great track record on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's still so many are subscribed.
I know.
It's like the top, again, it's the top streaming service in the world. And ultimately, yeah, it's not going to be good for consumers, like in terms of pricing. You know, you might have to have a mega bundle. It's effectively back to
cable.
Oh, that's
the other question is, are they going to say like, well, now you have access to, are they going to be smart enough to keep HBO separate? Or are they going to say HBO is now a part of this? You owe us $20 a month more because that's what you would have paid for HBO.
I don't
I don't think they'll do that, because I think that actually would lead to a huge subscriber drop off.
It would. Yeah. It very much would. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of like families who can't afford it.
Yeah. If my Netflix went from like $10 to $30 so that I have HBO, Kate would have to find somebody else to cover Netflix movies.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I could afford that and I would still be out. I would still be completely uninterested.
Oh, yeah. I could do it, but I'm like, no, I don't need for. No.
I mean, all right, well, but also as someone who does both, like maybe I would do it, but I'm also just like someone who's been like a lifelong Warner fan. And, you know, despite the company's many money tumultuous moments, I feel a sense of relief. I'm sorry. Like, it's just like, again, like I would combine with all the other feelings that it is one of the least bad options. It's not Paramount. Please never let it be Paramount.
Yes. Yeah. It not being Paramount is huge.
Yes. Knock on wood.
But yeah. Good talk. I appreciate all those thoughts. That's something for me to think about. Before we get into the episode, you guys want to plug social media? Where can people find you online?
I am at Gatsu083 on Blue Sky, Instagram, though I almost never post there, and Twitter.
All right. And Swara?
And I'm on Blue Sky at Spider Swars.
All right. And you can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex. And with that, let's talk about Wrapped. Did you guys look at yours this year, or do you engage in this tradition at all?
So fun fact, I am boycotting Spotify.
I'm not on Spotify either, but other websites that do it.
Oh, yeah.
Know?
I didn't. I haven't done any this year.
Okay.
The only one that has popped up for me, because I've never had Spotify, just because I still, ridiculously enough, buy my digital music, quote unquote. Marvel Rivals, when I logged in this morning, which that was really cool, because like they had a breakdown of like each season of the game, who you played the most, what your stats were, and stuff. So that was cool.
Someone's
going to
get a really depressing Marvel Wrapped. Where it's like you won 2% of your games.
Well, thankfully it was better than that. Apparently my healing is always 90 plus, over better than 90 plus percent of other healers.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, I also only play quick play, so that might help. But so I did that. So I saw that one. But otherwise, I don't think, like, I don't know if it's just that I'm not active enough on Discord, or if it's a Nitro thing or something, but I have not seen the Discord Wrapped. I don't know if it's just because, you know, I post on it maybe half a dozen times a month, so this is
I think what I saw
about.
Is that they were, like, rolling it out slowly to people.
Okay.
Let me see. Discord Wrapped. Oh, yeah, Discord Checkpoint 2025 rolling out now.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, so I looked at my Apple Music one, and that actually led me to realize, so I, a few years ago, switched back to using my iPod, and I would still use Apple Music every now and then for things that I either didn't own or things that I wasn't sure I wanted to buy yet. And this year I realized that I've been using my iPod a lot more, because there were multiple months where there just weren't data for my Apple Wrapped. It was like, here's your January, your February, your April. And I was like, wait, what happened to March? Like, so that was kind of interesting to see. And now I'm like, do I have to go into iTunes and pull all of my play counts and see who my top five artists were, and like, if I want this information? But yeah, that's the only one I've looked at so far. And I assume that you listening at home know what we're talking about, but this was introduced by Spotify in 2016. And I don't know that they're the first people to ever do this, but they definitely are the ones who popularized it. And it's, they just take all of your listening habits from across the year. They tell you who were your top artists, your top songs, albums,
genres.
What did you listen to each month? Like, oh, you were in the top 1% of listeners for this artist, that kind of thing. And it, you know, I think it has wide appeal. I think it's a really, really smart marketing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether or not it's ultimately like an ethical or good one, that's up for debate. But it's really smart, because what you do is all you have to do is maintain your service and keep your data logs and then regurgitate it to consumers and they will market for you.
But you're constantly selling your data to the platform.
Well, exactly. So that's where it gets gross. But
I mean, just the fact that, you know, recommendation algorithms exist mean that that you know they're tracking all that information anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So like,
yeah,
they're just giving you something fun to do with it to make it a little more palatable. I mean, not that that's necessarily how they thought of it. I don't know that they care.
Yeah.
But that was the effect. But yeah, I think it has like a pretty big appeal. Like, if you're just really into an artist, it's, and this, I don't know that I agree that this is a feeling you should chase, but like, people feel good seeing that they were high in the percent of listeners. Like, oh, I listened to Chapel Roan more than anyone this year. And then, you know, music snobs, people who just want to have that obscure, interesting top five artist. And there's also, I think, genuinely a good social component of people who like music and want to discover new music and seeing what your friends listen to and what really had their attention. This was smart, and basically everyone else has jumped in on this. I looked it up. Apple has it. Tidal has it. YouTube Music has it. Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation, Steam, they all do it. Discord now does it. And there's probably more I didn't know the Marvel Rivals did one. But all of these companies that are providing a service to you and then tracking your user data are now trying to package it in a way that makes you want to share about their platform.
Yeah, and it's effectively a really good social media marketing tool for all of these companies by having your artistic taste reflected back at you and in that way making you feel better about yourself, making you feel like, oh, I appreciate this, or this artist I really admire, I can share with, effectively share online my love for them and maybe get more people to listen to them if they're undervalued, or maybe if you're a Swiftie, you know, you're like constantly posting about that. And
it also shames some people when they're like, oh, that was what I listened to the most this year.
I do know some
parents who are like, my child has destroyed my Spotify Wrapped.
Right. Right. I mean, and that goes to show as well, like, how ineffective of a measure it actually is, because you have these families, you have couples, you have people sharing a Spotify account, and yeah, that messes up the algorithm, because thankfully, you know, everyone may have different tastes. And it's like, I as someone who participated in it for years, I understand the appeal. I understand wanting to have this be a distinct identity marker for yourself, like in your, again, or your artistic tastes. And, you know, I would say, like, the thing that for me, like, aligns most with doing that right now would be Letterboxd. I really enjoy it, and it feels harmless enough, at least, you know, currently. Hopefully it stays that way. But yeah, it's also become something that people have felt the need to do, like, oh, everyone else is doing it, I should do it. Like, there's such a groupthink mentality to it, and in a way that sort of counteracts some of the artistic standouts of
although practice. I want to say, so you said something there that sent me down a rabbit hole in my brain. So the Letterboxd comparison, because I think something interesting about the Spotify one is, like you were saying, people feel special. They think it's a reflection of them. It's their, what they value, what they like, whatever. But ultimately, your Spotify Wrapped isn't a reflection of you. It's a reflection, it's not a reflection of who you are, what you believe. It's a reflection of the things that you like. Whereas on Letterboxd, you have to, you rate things and you engage and you write, you don't have to write reviews, but you can. And so that's one where it's like, oh, no, like, this is social, but the judgment is on how I interact with it, how I perceive it, how I understand it, not on whether or not I passively consumed it. And I think that that's a really interesting distinction, because, yeah, it's a lot of people are sharing, look at this, I listen to Taylor Swift more than anyone. I listen to, there was one year where I was in like the top 5% of Beastie Boys listeners. And I was like, that's not unexpected, like a little bit. But it's ultimately, it's like, well, that doesn't mean anything about me other than that I listen to a lot of Beastie Boys. But we ascribe that meaning to it of like, that means that I have XYZ taste. That means these are my sensibilities. And ultimately, it's that thing of, is it, I won't say that it is flatly something that is hollow or not to be engaged with, because I think there's a way to do it that actually does extract a little bit of self-reflection and analysis. But I think it also lends itself to that very passive consumption and that very simplified, just like, look what I like, look at my good taste,
The other thing, which is always the flip side of that, and I know that this is what jumps to my brain when talking about sharing these sorts of things, you know, childhood trauma and all. I've always been interested, I enjoyed seeing the Marvel Rivals one and seeing who I played and how I did and stuff. Then, of course, at the end, there's the offer to get some in-game currency to share it. Which I did not do. One, I don't have my PC hooked up to any social media.
Wait,
so.
You have to... Oh, okay. I thought you were saying that you have to, like, pay them
to release that data. They would effectively pay me to post it because they want that hype.
That's interesting.
Which I would never do, largely because as a young person, I was... And while it doesn't bother me like it used to, I am that person who, like, if social media existed back in the 80s, I would have been that kid who saw everyone else post it and go like, oh, I'm not going to post mine because none of the artists are on my top 10. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be the weird guy, is always something that I see. And I always were, like some poor teen who's the only person who doesn't have Huntrix in their top 10 listens this year or whatever and be like, oh, God. Which, I mean, you know, that's no one's fault. That's a side effect of social sharing. You know, you're always going to have someone who is going to be the odd man out. But whenever I see stuff like that, that's always the group I think of is that person who's like, everyone's like, share your thing. And they're like, no, I don't want to show you what I listen to because I don't want to hear about it.
Listen, I have a cousin who I saw him for the first time after a while. And somehow we were talking about music and I asked what he listened to. And his sister started laughing and then his mom was like, what are you? And I was like, I asked him what he listens to. No one in that house knows what he listens to.
Mm-hmm. No,
he uses headphones. He doesn't talk about music. He does listen to it. They know he does. Just no one knows what it is.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, good for him. As long as he's not listening to, you know, like horrible, evil shit.
Exactly. And yeah, I'm betting it's just that he's listening to pop that wouldn't be cool for him to, as a teenage boy, that wouldn't be cool for him to listen to.
Yeah, I feel like we all did that at some point or another. And it goes
my
to
first, one of my first two CDs was Britney Spears.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for you, man. That's amazing. It goes to show, you know, that social notion, that social aspect of doing the sharing and, again, categorizing yourself, you know, based on your artistic or music tastes and wanting to appear, oh, I listen to the norm of what others in my demographic listen to or my cohort listens to. And that sort of like defeats the purpose of, again, standing out as an individual. But there's so many incentives, you know, like through mostly toxic practices that discourage that. So, it would understandably make someone want to not share what music they listen to with when you have all this pressure around them. And I guess, like, but the flip side of that, of course, is like you're actually sharing more of these indie artists. You're actually having conversations about music. You're actually building up the collective consciousness, like, again, for an artist that you love. And that's how artists are able to grow as well. Like, for example, I'm really into this one band. They just came out with their inaugural album. They're called Resident Lightweight. It's like very folklore. One of the singers is Ali Bourzgui, who is the first Moroccan American to play Orpheus. And I want to support fellow Swana artists. And he implements some Moroccan themes into it. It's like really great. But that's the thing. I mean, obviously, I have this platform now on a podcast to talk about it. But just generally, I have been telling friends and my wife and others about this band. And I'm getting like more people listen to it. So there's something to be said, I think, just like in general for topics, you know, whether it's film, TV, music. Obviously, we still write about them. Obviously, we still talk about them online. But there's a level of quality in just talking about it as human beings face to face. And like, I think, I don't know about y'all, but for me, I think I'm more encouraged to watch something when I like see it when I talk with someone in person about it, you know?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And so I think that that's the, and maybe another effect of it is, and not to say that people like don't talk about things that they like about until Spotify Wrapped, but there is that thing of like, you can tell people about the music you like literally whenever you want. I try to post when I find new cool stuff, I try to talk about it on here or post about it on Blue Sky and tell my friends about it. And, you know, there is that question of like, is it better to just like hype people all year long or to wait for that Spotify Wrapped push? Because I think Spotify does see a bump in subscriptions and in people accessing the service every year as a result of the campaign. So, it's all like, what, you know, what's going to, and I mean, also I want to say very plainly, this is not a secret. Spotify is the worst way to support the artist you like.
Yeah.
They get nothing.
Yeah. I was about to say there's like, increasing exodus of artists from Spotify who hate the residuals that they're being paid, who hate that their CEO is investing in AI weaponry,
running ice ads.
It's just like a lot. I mean, I've been really enjoying Tidal, I have to tell you. And the sound
quality. I've heard Tidal's really good.
The sound quality on Tidal is very good. I don't know about their own CEO. I'm sure there's some problematic.
Oh, all these dudes suck on some level. Yeah. You just have to dig a little bit.
Yeah. But Spotify currently, you know, while it's on top, also seems to be the worst. And I think this is to be said, like, while we are still in our capitalist hellscape, that we still use the tools however we can to effect some sort of change, however we can. And, you know, like, that's not to judge anyone who is still using Spotify. I totally understand. You know, this is just me encouraging y'all to look at other options.
Look at other options. Look at Bandcamp.
Yeah.
I honestly use Bandcamp a lot. I have bought a bunch of music on there. I think it's a good way to support artists. When you buy an album, there's usually a little option of, do you want to send them a message? So like a few weeks ago, I went and saw the band Lucius, and their opening act was this band called Attention Bird Utopia. I liked what I could hear of it. The audience was terrible and talked like the whole opener set was very frustrating. But I liked what I heard. So I went and looked on Bandcamp and was like, oh, cool, it's here. So I bought the album and put a little message on there that was like, just saw you guys in Portland, really loved what you did. Thanks for a great show. You know, whether or not they read those, I don't know, but hopefully they did. But it's just a great way. I think what people don't like and what they forget is we're so ingrained in recommendations and algorithms and things telling you what to watch next and what to listen to next. Bandcamp doesn't do that. Bandcamp is a marketplace, not a it's a marketplace and distribution platform. It is not a discovery oriented platform necessarily. I think there are, they do recommendations of like, here's our 10 best, you know, R&B albums of 2025 or whatever, like that kind of stuff. And they'll do highlight artists, and they do have a good function built out for searching where you can see like top sellers that have XYZ tags that you've selected, like show me, you know, metal and then add in experimental, psychedelic, whatever. And then it will just be like, hey, here's everyone who used those tags on their albums. Here's what people bought. And you can kind of find stuff that way. And I think if anything, it's encouraged me to poke around more and to get more curious about what's out there. Whereas, you know, and I, so that actually, this segues us into another aspect of this, which is Spotify is heavy on recommending things to you and telling you what you should listen to and giving you an algorithm and making it so that you have the option for your playlist to keep going with similar music when it's done, which means that your Spotify Wrapped is not a reflection of your taste as much as it is a reflection of your taste and Spotify's input on that. Obviously, no one exists in a vacuum. My Bandcamp is not a reflection of my audio taste purely. It has been informed by people I've talked to and things I've seen. But Spotify pretty specifically tries to influence what you listen to. So your Wrapped is, not quite as you as you want it to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that is a very interesting thing that we sometimes lose track of a little bit with how accustomed we're getting to things being recommended and having to just kind of like, I know, like, you know, my YouTube tends to be a lot like that. You know, like I watch one video of something, you know, like the other, for some reason, I forget why, but something made me think of that scene from The Menu, if you've seen it, the hamburger scene. And I just searched up and watched that clip again because it's like, oh my god, that's gonna be one of the best scenes of all time. And because of that, now, you know, like, I have so much menu stuff in my algorithm.
Like, do you want to watch the hamburger scene, but we rotoscoped it to be Ronald McDonald?
Donald, or like, we did this.
And actually, you know, I do want to see that. So if that exists on the internet.
And stuff. But yeah, so like, then of course, you know, you click a couple more and stuff. And so, yeah, there is definitely a level of manipulation, makes it sound maybe a bit more nefarious than it may necessarily be, but you know,
but
like
fundamentally that is the
but
word,
you know, that is probably the word of like, where do you go, you know, like you see enough recommendations with stuff that you eventually go, okay, what is this, you know, you keep seeing a game pop up in recommended because you've watched stuff concerning this game and that game, you're like, wait, which one is this, I haven't heard of this. So there is definitely some leading. One hopes that for the most part, the leading is genuinely, hey, 90% of people who watch what you watch also watch this, so you may genuinely be interested in it. You hope that it's not a, hey, these people paid us to lead people to them, so here you go. Who knows?
Yeah. But I mean, so when I was using Spotify, the way that I would discover music is, so there were two weird things that I, or one weird thing that I did, one practical thing that I did. One, I think it's still there, there's a similar artist, and it just shows you people who listen to this band also listen to this band. And I was like, cool, this is good. And then the weird way I would find music is I would just think of a word or phrase or genre and just search for it and see if anything out there at all, you know, uses those words in that combination or whatever. And that, like, has led to some actual discovery, like the band Sincere Engineer, one of my favorite pop punk bands, found them through just like looking through random stuff, typing in random words, and came across their first album and was like, oh, this rules, I'm way into this. But yeah, it's weird. It's also, I mean, we kind of skipped straight past the biggest thing, which is the surveillance of it all.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've been talking a lot to either of you want to talk about surveillance capitalism.
It's bad. It's bad, it is, man. It's just, I think, yeah, it's, again, I understand the impulse to have, you know, your data reflected back at you and view this as a really cool thing, but then you remember all these companies are accumulating and selling your data all across the internet to each other and degrading your privacy and your, in a way, like your uniqueness. They keep chipping away at it in that homogenizing fashion of, for example, the recommendations. You know, while it's good you're able to discover other artists you like, it's also like, do you want it to just be based off of what others like? You know, it's like, do you want it all be determined by an algorithm and not by, again, your own unique tastes and like findings of these artists?
I mean, think about how often the algorithm has been wrong for you personally.
Totally. It's wrong all the time. Prime example on YouTube. I do not want, just because I search for something about a film like Wicked for Good does not mean I want all the reviews of it to pop up in my feed when it's come out before I can see it. Like, what the hell, YouTube? Or anything with a spoiler or thumbnail from any of the films we may be a day or late to seeing, but after premiere day. That's the worst example.
Because it's the whole thing is that algorithms do not necessarily understand positive and negative engagement. Yeah. So like,
they just want engagement of any
the
sort,
fact that you can't type in like Wicked for Good parentheses derogatory or whatever, like parentheses negative. It's just going to be like, oh, you watched a video about Wicked, we'll show you more. And you're like, no. I really just, or it's like, I cared about that one thing. Like I've seen a bunch of people posting about the Scarecrow makeup.
Yeah.
And so like, maybe you just looked up Scarecrow makeup.
That's a spoiler for
Wicked.
People who haven't seen or know about the musical.
It's at this point, I don't want to say I don't care. I just always think of a 20-year-old musical based on a 30-year-old book, based on an 80-year-old movie, based on a 100-year-old book.
Yes.
It's like, if you don't know what happens yet. But no, it's like, so yeah, people were like, oh, this makeup's weird, look at it. So maybe someone hops on YouTube, types in Scarecrow makeup, and now it's like, we're gonna just flood you with this because we don't understand.
Which shows the limits of these algorithms and how much human input goes into them, actually. And I'm not gonna get on that place for that sort of tirade, because again, like, throughout all of these companies, the AI, the algorithms, it's all based upon their accumulation of your data. And mm-hmm. now you have literally warnings I've seen on several accounts about how Meta is now taking all of our messages and feeding them into their AI algorithm. So basically nothing you say on Meta can ever be 100% safe. Not that it ever was. I hope, like, we know we weren't approaching it with that assumption. But frankly, I'm sure people do, you know, and WhatsApp is owned by Meta. Unless, like, you have disappearing messages, but still, Meta probably still owns that data, and it's, like, just so messed up. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, for example, more people should be using Signal. You know, that's an excellent messaging app. Also, I highly encourage people, instead of Google, because Google accumulates shit tons of your data all the time. Instead of Google, people really should be using DuckDuckGo. It like immediately erases. It doesn't like hold any of your data. And instead, it makes its money through having like some direct advertisements, including a shopping tab. But yeah, DuckDuckGo is great. People should be using Firefox. Like, there are alternatives out there, some imperfect, but we have power as consumers mm-hmm. to... yeah, avoid all of this.
I mean, yeah, it's normalizing that data collection. Mm-hmm. It's making it in a way desirable for certain people. Like, yeah. If Spotify said we are no longer collecting your data, so Spotify Wrapped won't be a thing anymore, some people would be upset about that. And I'm like, I don't know, I'm kind of cool with you guys not knowing what I listen to and when.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a post where someone was like, my Spotify Wrapped got ruined because I set a specific song to be my alarm clock. And so Spotify was like, man, you liked this song more than anyone. You listen to it every day. And it was like, no, it was just what I used to wake up. Like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think the normalization of that tech is just, you know, that's risky. And it's tricky because I get why we like it. We talked about that at the top. Like, we outlined a bunch of stuff as to things that make people enjoy this. And I don't want to take that from people, because like, mm-hmm. I really do like the social aspect of music, but it's kind of the thing of if the negative use of the data scraping were hypothetical, this would be a different conversation, but it's not. It's very practical and happening and active. These companies are collecting data, hoarding it, selling it, you know, whatever. And so that makes me feel a little bit different about it. You mm-hmm. know, it's not a boogeyman. It happened.
Also, a related side note, all of these data centers that are being built that consume so much water, electricity, driving your electricity prices up. More often than not, those data centers are holding your personally identifiable information, like especially that websites like Google, Meta, and others mm-hmm. get your data from. Amazon.
Yeah. And then before we switch over towards like the ending thoughts, the other thing, and tell me if this is me being like not catastrophic, but like more conspiracy minded. I feel like when one of the biggest music streaming platforms has this amount of free advertising, it really does just create a like rich get richer scenario where it makes competition harder, because how do you even break into the market when someone literally just gets millions of dollars of free advertising every year to get more and more people bought into their platform? And it feels like, it's anti-competitive in a way. And I'm sure that they'd be like, well, there's no laws against it, so it's fine. And I'm like, you know, whether the fact that if it's not written down, I don't consider it unethical has always seemed like a really shitty business practice to mm-hmm. me. Like, if it's not blatantly illegal, then it's fair game. And it's like, that doesn't mean that it's an okay thing to do.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's definitely something to be said to that. I mean, on a much smaller scale, but like, it kind of reminds of, they don't seem to do them anymore, at least I don't see them. But like, back when Funko always used to do the share this and someone will win, one of the people who retweet a post that has an image of an upcoming Funko Pop will win the Funko Pop. So people mm-hmm. would like reshare them because, oh my gosh, Luffy's getting a Funko Pop and has 20,000 shares. It's like, you're advertising for them. That's all you're doing.
Yeah, you're advertising.
Until eventually people start asking, does anyone know anyone that's ever actually won this? And then it seemed to go away. But yeah, like, so there is definitely always those things. And I'm sure that that is a big part of it for them. I do like understand that, like, well, you know, we're a big streamer and we've created something that's really popular. Like, the like debate of whether or not that needs to be punished because it got too popular, basically. Like, if they were smaller and they're doing it, it's fine. But I see the gray area of it's just like, oh, we did something people like. It advertises for us, but like I don't say that to discredit your opinion, but I see like the so Spotify can't do anything because they're so big that so many people will share it that, you know, like there is that weird how do you.
Oh, totally. I think it's I would say it's probably it's an unintended and uncontrollable consequence of it.
Yeah.
Where it's like they, you know, there's no way for them to prevent Spotify Wrapped from influencing people psychologically to want to subscribe to their platform. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, and to not look at other platforms and not consider them. So it's that thing of like, it's more like this is a bad outcome that you guys couldn't really stop other than to not do this at all.
This thing. But you know, why wouldn't you do it? It's huge for you. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. It would take a level of altruism that billion-dollar companies do not have.
They never will.
Yeah. They wouldn't be billion-dollar companies if they had it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's really, like, honestly, I would say on the onus of the consumer. Like, if you want to do Spotify Wrapped, then you should just go in with eyes wide open about what is it actually doing and if you want to actually be selling your data like that. Like, if more... For all these companies, if consumers were more readily educated about what it's actually meant this whole time, ever since we first got a Facebook account in high school or middle school or what have you, and we realized what we were effectively selling. You know, this goes back to the Cambridge papers and Meta and Facebook, you know, that from like several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, and beyond, as we talked about earlier in this conversation, listeners of music can think more critically for themselves of, do I want to have this automation just because everyone else is doing it? Or can I be more active in real life outside of the screen and talking about music and why I love it and what artists I am really into now? And I think that we really do lose the I mean, not to say like, you know, online engagement isn't organic in and of itself, but still, like, the real life physical engagement of talking about the things we love. And, you know, obviously we're reliant on the internet to find those with similar interests, but guess what? There's still like live spaces. There's still music stores. There are still venues to go to where the artist will be performing. You know, if you're able to afford it, of course. There's, you know, your local comic shop that you can go and discuss everything that's happening in the industry or with your favorite franchise or whatever. And yeah, I just think that these real life spaces, they're always going to carry more weight than whatever this AI generated list of your data from the last year is, honestly.
Yeah. And I was going to say, yeah, like go to your local record store for music. If you don't have a record store, go to Barnes & Noble. They actually have like not a terrible, I'm not going to say they have a great selection. It's pretty small because they're a bookstore, not a record store. But it's a way for you to get music or go find a used media store I have a hard time recommending that because I live in Portland, so we have stuff like that everywhere. Go out and discover and explore and talk to people. And Spotify Wrapped can be a part of how you talk to people. I think for me, it's just that, you know, we should be conscious consumers. We should be aware of what it is that we're engaging with and leaning into and supporting. Maybe you do yearn for the data mines. Maybe that's where you're at. For me personally, I don't. Maybe I will go and pull my numbers off of my iPod and post it online and be like, hey, here's a snapshot.
Yeah, why not? But like, in that, you give a challenge to people, which I think people also find engaging. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah.
Oh, no, you're good. Yeah, it's I think it's also, this is going to just like go past everything that we've talked about. It's also just okay to not know, to just like the things that you like and not need to have statistics and metrics around it. I think that it gives people, it's the bragging rights of it where you're like, well, you were top 5%. I was top 4%. So I like it more than you. And it's like, that's not necessarily true because you could have had that album on in the background while you vacuumed and couldn't hear any of it. That doesn't mean that you liked it. It means that you selected it to play. it's, you know, it, so there is a thing of like, it's fine to not know. It's, it also doesn't matter. And it is not a reflection on you as a person necessarily.
Yeah.
Also, to like these things or to
just,
not.
Just popping in my head with the Spotify example, and I don't know how much this would work with others, but I also wonder, like, it feels like that would also get diluted a lot with how yeah. often I feel people, I see people talk about like, oh, someone shared their playlist of favorite whatever genre. And it's like, so if you put that on shuffle and it hits X artist more than the others, then that's the one that you listen to the most. Again, even though maybe you were driving in your car and you weren't really listening yep. to it, but you know, it just
came through. This is a dated problem that I have because I use an iPod. But if you press play on an iPod and there's nothing actually like queued up, it will just play the first song like alphabetically. So the number of times that I have accidentally played this one song that I actually have not listened to all that often, but I've hit play. So there's iTunes tracks. There's I think there's a played count and a skipped count. And so that song's metrics are completely screwed because I will accidentally start it and then immediately stop it and go to something else because it's not what I wanted.
Oh, yeah.
So again, like none of this is perfect. None of this is accurate. Just like the stuff that you like, that's mm-hmm. fine.
Yeah.
Now that's not to say that I don't find there to be something interesting with all of it. Like, but also I just think data is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, the way that this has gone and normalized what is ultimately like not a great aspect of the current technological world we live in is where I'm like, for me, it's better to be like, I'm not going to really lean into this than to get into it.
That's fair.
Cause I think also there's a question of like, did the company have to track all that? Like there was an era where your PlayStation did not tell you how much you have played a game. I think you actually couldn't reliably look at play data until the PS5. Even on the PS4, you could only look at the data for your recently played games. And so, you know, and then they started doing the year-end type stuff. But yeah, like it's a question of like, is it even necessary to gather this to begin with? And obviously Spotify does because that's how they decide who to pay out. But like, did they have to reference it back to the consumers and then make it a marketing? Like there's just a lot of questions and unknowns. And I think really my whole intention with this conversation is like wanting to bring to light that we need to interrogate these things.
Yeah. And it's really all about the convenience. It's all about, yeah, just having an easy list of your favorite artists and being able to show that at a very basic level, because our lives are so busy. People have to work multiple jobs to make ends meet.
Yep.
And it's, this fun thing. But again, unfortunately, we still have to look at it very critically going into it and with the selling of your own data, which ultimately leads to like so many of the systemic problems that we have. So yeah, I understand. I totally understand why people just aren't able to, you know, dig into that immediately. And I hope that listening to this podcast helps you in that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that about does it for me. Do you all have any other closing thoughts or?
No. Nope. You know, just, you know, be mindful of the reasons why things happen as well as what they are. But at the same time, like we've all said, you know, like at this point, you know, if getting your Spotify rap brings you a little joy, take the joy, you know, to an extent, you know, enjoy it, you know, not engaging with it isn't going to tell Spotify not to keep all your data.
Right.
So you might as well get something out of it,
by deleting
suppose.
Your account.
Yeah. But remember, corporations aren't people, so they can't be your friend.
That is true. Yes. Do not stand
exactly.
Corporations. Exactly.
Amen.
All right. Well, with that, I think that does it for it. If you want it, if you want more, those of you listening at home, you can get it. But Why Though is a whole website. We are also on Blue Sky. The site and our Blue Sky handle are both butwhytho.net. You can also subscribe to our newsletter, which is free, or donate, which is money, by going to butwhytho.net/support. And there's just links to both of those things there. Both of those help the website. So if you can give, you could give. And if you don't have the money to give, you could get the newsletter. Again, both are helpful. Both help us keep the lights on, making the stuff that you like, paying our writers, all that kind of stuff. Swara, Charles, thank you for joining me. I had a great time with this conversation. I hope you did as well. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next time.